dan dan da dan da dan da 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 da. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. It's Paul Spooner on the Paul Spooner Podcast. Early this morning, late last night, I was looking around on the internet trying to find out if anyone else had done the stuff that I'm trying to do with fledgling, stuff with subdivision and parametric generation of geometry. And so I was looking around, and there have been a lot of people who have experimented with this kind of thing, but I found one in particular that was just hilariously misleading. So in architecture, you want to make something functional and beautiful. And it seems like the architecture people, or at least this one architecture person that I found, has kind of assumed that anything can be made functional, and so you can just make it as beautiful as you want, or as strange looking as you want. It's a modern art kind of thing. But he was doing it with computational methods, which are very interesting. So I looked on his site, and he has some very, very nice-looking renders. And I don't know if they're renders or if they're actual objects, because I think he does 3D printing where he does some sort of computational modeling, and then he has it printed out after he does the generation. But he's got some sort of parametric software that he's written that will generate this stuff, or that he's had someone else write for him. So he's trying to generate these like architectural ideas or something. I'm not exactly sure, but he's completely forgotten about function. And of course, this is especially repugnant to me because I'm an engineer, and that's all I do all day is function. Like, the appearance for me is irrelevant. As long as it works properly, that's great. And usually it ends up looking nice if it works really well, because it's an elegant design. So I'm trying to make something that's functional, and this guy was trying to make something that was beautiful. But the extent to which he has forgotten the functional purpose is astounding. And maybe he would say the same about the things I make. So when you're designing something in architecture, the function of architectural objects is to serve as a living space. And it can be a living space for labor or a living space for relaxation. Generally, I mean, those are generally the two main divisions that things fall into. I mean, you could have something that's in between, but functionally, if you want a long-lasting culture, you're going to need children, because long-lasting culture can't live longer than the lifespan of the people who populate it. So you need children, and to have children, you need a place where they are safe, and usually workplaces are not safe, because you're moving around, using a lot of energy, you have heavy stuff. So there's this kind of bifurcation that naturally happens, where you've got homes which have children in them and workplaces which don't have children in them. And then as a result, you also have homes which are generally domestic, which have women and children, because women generally take care of children, as I've gone over in another post. And then workplaces which are generally masculine, they've got men working in them because the men aren't taking care of the children, and so they're working to support everyone. But there are some features shared among these two. You can't immediately go into, oh well, houses are completely different from workplaces. They're not. They are all built on earth so far, and so you need something to keep off the rain, because generally water interferes with the things that you're doing, either by getting your children wet and making it hard for them to sleep, and getting mildew in their hair and stuff like that, or getting your work wet. And usually if you have work that's being done in a building, you don't want it getting wet. If you wanted it getting wet, you would do it outside without a building. So buildings protect against the rain, they protect against the sun, generally they protect against the environment, anything that's in the environment. Fluid motion, water and air, radiation from the sun, heat and cold, all these kind of things, that's what a building is designed to do. It's designed to create a controlled environment, a designed environment. But inside of a building, generally, you're not going to be just sitting around doing nothing. At a workplace, there are things happening, there are operations being performed of some nature, and at the very least, even if there are no major industrial operations, there's still operations performed by humans, and humans produce waste products. So you've got operations at work, and then of course at home, you've got operations as well. Children produce a huge amount of waste, and because they're still learning how to be efficient and they're still learning how to do things, and so they run around and make messes and all kinds of stuff. So one of the shared things among buildings, alongside their general function, which is to create a controlled environment, is to be as easy to clean as possible. A workplace is going to have lots of detritus, lots of extra stuff, lots of bits and bobs and odds and ends that are spalled off from the processes that you're performing at this location. And even if it's just an office where people sit around and work on paperwork or computers all day, you're still going to have dust and lint from their clothing. You're going to have detritus from their bodies. So there's going to be all this kind of stuff. You know, people are going to sneeze and blink and sweat. And so there's going to be always some form of grime that will accumulate in any building. A building creates a controlled environment, and part of that environment is you don't want grime everywhere, generally. And if you do want grime everywhere, then you want the grime to be of a specific quality. Like if you have a sewage treatment plant, you want to have a certain quality of grime, certain aspects to it. So a building creates a controlled environment, and it needs to be easy to clean. And, I mean, that's kind of the extent to where, and maybe accessible, I mean, you can say accessible, but some buildings are not accessible. For example, buildings that are designed to house very dangerous processes. But even when you have dangerous processes, you still want to be able to clean the structure easily, inside and out. Inside for the processes that go on inside it, and outside for the environment that will no doubt assail it. Because that's why you have a building in the first place, is because the environment is not hospitable for the kind of operations that you're trying to perform. So functional includes cleanable. And so going back to this guy, this architecture guy, and I don't remember his name, and if I did, I probably wouldn't say it because I don't have very many kind things to say about his work. But he has an idea that you can use 3D printing and computational techniques to create architecture that has incredible structural complexity. And the things that he's made are somewhat interesting to look at. He's trying to infuse information into his objects or something. I think maybe it's all just kind of fluff and gander, but he's created a number of objects which, to his credit, do have incredible structural complexity. Their surface is just covered in these nooks and crannies and completely convoluted shapes. And I'm sure they're very fascinating. It looks like a coral reef kind of thing, where you've got this super fine structure. And there's whole pillars, and he's made a grotto of this stuff. It's all very interesting. But it fails one of the tests of a building, in that this stuff would be impossible to clean. There's no way you're gonna get, you use a toothbrush or something and get all the tiny little crevices and clean all the, because inevitably there's gonna be someone who's gonna sneeze on this if it's in an actual building. Of course, and he's got these installed in an art installation somewhere where they're behind glass, or you can go in and like touch them very gently with your hands. But they're never gonna last 10 years with people touching them. They're gonna get filled with skin cells and spalled off snot, and it's just going to be everywhere, and it's going to be impossible to clean. You'd have to have someone full-time just cleaning your architecture if your building was made out of this kind of stuff. It was just atrociously poor thinking on his part to be like, oh, this is the future of architecture. Now, you could, to his credit, make this kind of architecture and then overlay it with a shellac of some kind, or have a casting made around it that fills in the crevices and makes a smooth surface, so that you'd get both the interesting appearance and the functionality of a smooth surface. And maybe that's what he had in mind. That's not what he did, but maybe that's the eventual application. But just atrociously horrible. I mean, monumentally stupid to say this is what we're going to be building our houses or our structures out of. It's like, no, you can't. No, you won't be, because you can't clean it. Now, if you're trying to build it as a base object for some biological process, like a coral reef substitute, if you're trying to build some sort of coral reef object that has a very high surface area to volume ratio, maybe you could do something like that. They do kind of look like coral reefs or structures of crystals that are grown in lattices that are at odd angles, have these very complex shapes and intersecting planes and things, but not as structure. I mean, the Greeks got just about as far as they could get with fluted columns. Even the flutes, I imagine, would be difficult to clean. But a flute, if it's of uniform shape, you can take a rag and just run it down the thing, and there you go, you've cleaned out the flute and the column. And so it, without a great deal of trouble, you can clean those things. But, oh my goodness, the incredible complexity was just like, oh, this is impossible. And you see the same thing in other kind of experimental architecture and experimental design guys that are like, oh, what if we... One I saw was seashells, and there's this beautiful bathroom that someone made, and it's just inlaid with seashells all over the walls. And beautiful, but the first thing I thought was, man, if you fell against one of that, it would just destroy your skin, because, of course, the seashells are not just lying flat, they're also with their edge up, you know, because you can see the very beautiful edging, and but it's just an incredible hazard. Those things are so sharp and so jagged, it's like a room full of serrated knives. And then the other thing is, it's impossible to clean. If you look at this picture, it's like, man alive, who's gonna clean all that? You get mildew in the cracks, and you get mold and grime building up, and it's hard enough to clean a bathtub that's flat, let alone one of these convoluted, crazy, you know, seashell-encrusted bathrooms. So the bathroom is just the worst place. If you're going to do some sort of experimental, crazy, you know, put it in the sitting room or on the ceiling where no one's going to be touching it or accidentally throwing up on it or, you know, things like this where somewhere away from people as far as possible. And the ceiling's probably the best place for that. But, goodness, don't put it in the bathroom of all places. Oh, no. So, there we go. There's a short rant on architecture. Well, no, I guess I'm not done. So, another thing that you see in these kind of experimental architecture guys is, okay, so in a building, you've got, generally, a ceiling, walls, and a floor. Because, again, you're trying to keep off the environment. The sun's generally above you. Fluid that's falling from the sky, the water and things is generally above you, so you're going to want some sort of object situated over the top of this environment that you're creating to keep off the sun and rain. And then to keep this object up, you're going to need walls because floating technology hasn't worked very well so far in the past. I guess you could have like a blimp that's tethered by some tethers of some kind, and that would actually be a very interesting design, but no one's really done that functionally. Functionally, you've got compressive members that are holding up your roof. So you've got a roof, and then you've got walls. And then, since you're building, you're going through all this trouble to build a controlled environment, you put down a floor so that you're not walking on dirt or shattered rock or grass or whatever it is that the environment normally affords as a walking surface. So you put down a floor. Of the locations in a building, in a structure, the most functional is the ceiling and the floor, because the ceiling keeps off the wind and rain and sun, and the floor keeps off the people. And if you have a structure, a designed environment, usually it's going to be used for people. And so the floor is incredibly functional, and it's also exposed to a lot of wear. The roof is exposed to a lot of wear as well. Falling water isn't easy on materials, but the floor also. And the ceiling, or the roof, generally doesn't have... You don't clean the roof very often, and you get moss growing up there and stuff, but the materials that you build a roof out of are generally very resilient because they're exposed to falling water all the time. And so they don't really mind a little bit of moss or lichen or things like that. The floor, however, is not exposed to water because you've got a roof. That's the whole point of your structure. So it's not exposed to water, but is exposed to people's feet all day long. And hands, and if you're in a building, children rolling around on it. So your floor is incredibly important. The walls, they need to be structurally sound, but you can hang pictures on walls, and you can paint the walls different colors, and you can make them out of pretty flimsy materials, and it'll be okay. Generally, the walls aren't exposed to a huge amount of stress, especially the interior walls. And the same goes for the interior ceiling. The interior ceiling, if you have one, is almost purely visually functional. It's not there to keep off the rain. The roof does that. The ceiling is the part that's inside the building. It's just drywall. You can put whatever you want on the ceiling and it's fine. As evidenced by all the buildings that have those popcorn ceiling with the stucco, the really high texture stucco on it, or you know, all kinds of stuff. You can do all kinds of crazy things on the ceiling, and that's fine. So crazy things on the ceiling, walls, yeah, you can go a little bit wacky with the walls. You have to be careful. People will bump into the walls when they're walking around or carrying things, as they will do in a building that's designed for a purpose, and if you don't have a purpose for your building, why'd you build it? But the floor has to be really good. You have to have a well-designed floor. And so architecture guys go crazy with, oh, we can have steps and inset areas and we can make slopes and weird shapes. And it's like, well, you're not really thinking, though. If someone's going to pay to have this building built, you need to make it serve its purpose. And one of the purposes, one of the environmental considerations that you have to make on a building is the environment that you can't keep out. And here's what I mean. In a building, you can't keep out the air. And you could, hypothetically, and there are some buildings that are built like this, large autoclaves and things, that are structures that are enclosed and you can keep air out. But almost all buildings allow air to enter and exit. So you're going to need to put up with a certain amount of humidity. You're going to need to put up with a certain amount of oxidation potential. There's a lot of stuff that's involved with just letting air into your building. Another thing that you can't keep out, and which people kind of tend to forget when they're doing this kind of crazy architecture, the hypothetical design, and, you know, those like modern art stuff, is you can't keep out gravity. So, and we have found out no way at all to do this. If we had, then we would be already in space and building stuff in space, and then you can be operating microgravity where you're only subjected to a very small amount of tidal forces. But you can't keep gravity out of a normal building. Which means that you have to contend with gravity. The people inside the building and the structures and the materials inside the building are going to have to endure gravity. And one of the results of gravity is that people make level surfaces. Flat level surfaces. Because a flat level surface has uniform potential under gravity. And it, of course, it's not perfectly flat. It's going to be slightly curved with the curvature of the Earth, depending on where you build it. But for the scale that people build most buildings, it's flat. And if you don't care about flat, you can say level, because level is the important thing. Level means that if you pour water on it, the water will not tend to pool in any one area. It'll just kind of spread out in a uniform level. And people build level floors because they take the least amount of energy to traverse. You don't have to spend energy going in any one direction. All you have to overcome is friction. And because when you put an object on a level surface, the object doesn't tend to roll or slide away. And when people are working in a building, they want to know where things are. It's a controlled environment. You're trying to control the wind and the rain and the objects that you have in this environment. And so when people put something down, they don't want it sliding off. They don't have to think about, oh, is this object going to behave in a strange manner? So they build level surfaces. Level surfaces are there because of gravity, and you can't keep gravity out of a building, at least as far as I know. If you do know how to keep gravity out of a building, please let me know. I would love to talk to you. And these architecture guys, they just go crazy with the steps and the insets and the ramps, and it's like, oh, come on, it's a waste of space. Because then you just have to build, you know, if you have an inset area, say, a floor inset, and this was, I think, popular in the 70s where you had these kind of conversation pits where there was lowered down a little bit. If you have one of those, then you're going to inconvenience everyone, because everyone's going to have to think about the edge of that area where it steps, and they're not going to be able to place objects over the edge of that area because they might totter one way or the other. They might tip over. You just introduce a great number of problems by introducing changes in level in the floor. So, for heaven's sakes, when you're building architecture, think about these things. Yes, you can make it pretty. Yes, you can make beautiful inlaid designs for flooring and walls, and especially the ceiling. The ceiling can be very convoluted, and it doesn't really matter. But please, please, think about what you're doing. Make level floors. It's because you can't keep out gravity. It's not because you're being unoriginal. So, there you go. The main structure of architecture was invented thousands of years ago, if not hundreds of thousands. And it's maintained the same general form for those thousands of years, not because people are unoriginal, not because they can't think of anything different, but because it's an optimized design for the environment that we're living in, which is an environment at the bottom of a sea of ocean that happens to have a large amount of water in it that condenses out of the atmosphere and falls down. that has sunlight, which is sometimes hazardous or dangerous or undesirable, and gravity. And those things are the things you have to contend with when you're building a structure. And so if you're going to design new architecture, that's fine. And I do think that there's a lot of room to improve on architecture in general. But don't forget about those things. They will come back to just destroy your designs in the future. You might be able to make something that's nice. And the other thing that you're going to have to deal with is grime and dirt and undesired detritus, because you're designing for human beings who are organic objects. They spall off parts of themselves, and even if they don't, they work with things that generally are being altered or changed in form. People chew food, and the food gets out, and the food gets on the floor, on the walls, or on the ceiling, heaven forbid. And you've got all these kinds of considerations. So environment, and then just grime and dirt and dust and mess. Don't forget about those things. Make your objects easy to clean. Make them have level surfaces on the floors. As far as possible, give them interesting qualities, certainly, but make them functional. There's no way that anyone's going to really adopt your designs unless they conform to these kinds of principles. And again, it's not because no one likes you. It's not because you're being original. The problem is that this is a highly optimized solution for a problem that has existed for a long time and will continue to exist as far as we can tell in the future. There's no even theoretical way that we can figure out to keep gravity out of buildings, and you wouldn't want to keep air out because then people couldn't breathe. So, there you go. A rant directed at architecture people. Oh, and I just hit a crow. Well, there we go. That's the end of the crow. See, there you go. Wild animals. That's another thing that you have to keep out of your building. A crow just flew right in front of my car, and of course, I had no time to react to it, and so it is now deceased. But a building stays in one place, and animals can get into it. So you do have to consider animals getting into buildings. There are some designs with very open atriums and things like that, and it's like, well, you know, that's fine. But it's not really a controlled environment if wild animals can enter and exit freely. There's going to be some consideration. There has to be some consideration for that. And wasps building nests and things, and squirrels getting into stuff. So animals too, but I think the environmental considerations are more important. Animals are part of the environment, but not always. Not always the biggest concern, I would say. This has been the Paul Spooner Podcast, and I might play you out if I get around to it. I still haven't edited. I'm so far behind in editing these things. Oh well, that's all right. I'm sure that you don't miss it. Yep. Oh no, he's dead. 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 Yep. 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 Dead.